Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. There is a group in South America that claims to have a sealed portion of the Book of Mormon and is translating it. Is it really a recycled Hoffman forgery? We'll find out more about this with Dr. Casey Griffiths. He's the author of 50 Relics of the Restoration, brand new book out, and I'm actually going to be giving away a copy of a signed copy of this book. So if you haven't signed up in our recent giveaways with Brent Ashworth, you're already still in my bowl here, but go ahead and sign up at gospeltangents.com/Casey, that's C-A-S-E-Y, and you could win a copy of 50 Relics of the Restoration. Now back to our conversation. All right, well, let's jump back to your book, 50 Relics of the Restoration. And so it's a fun little book in that Mormons, do Mormons have coffee tables? We talk about a coffee table book, right? Or a hot chocolate table book or something. But because it's got a lot of beautiful pictures in there, can you tell us a little bit more? Why did you guys decide to write that book?
We knew it was going to be visual, and yeah, a coffee table book or a bathroom book is what we were going for. it actually is a product of the interfaith relationship between the church, between our church, BYU, and Community of Christ, and that I went to the Community of Christ Temple, and they have this amazing collection of artifacts, a lot of which tie directly back to Joseph Smith's family, because Joseph Smith's children go with the RLDS Church, which becomes Community of Christ. And I went there right after I got hired at BYU. They take you on this new faculty tour where you get to go back and tour all the church history sites. And one of the highlights of the tour for me was when we went to the Community of Christ Temple and they brought all the stuff out of their archives. So for the first time, I saw the Mark Bible that Joseph Smith used in the translation. And the printer's manuscript of the Book of Mormon, which was there at the time. This was
before
it was sold. Yeah. A couple other things that were cool too, like a Masonic apron that belonged to Joseph Smith, or a copy of the Book of Mormon that belonged to Lucy Mack Smith. And I was really, really intrigued by the idea of the tangibility of these objects. That Everybody wants to talk about the gold plates and the Nephite interpreters and, you know, the Sword of Laban. And those objects are out of our reach right now. But there's this rich, rich collection of objects held by various restoration groups that aren't that old. I mean, we're kind of at the point in time where, you know, they talk about Christians 1,000 years ago trying to find a piece of the cross, where there's parallels to that in our religion as well, where I can't tell you how many people told me, you know, I have a cane made out of Joseph Smith's coffin, to the point to where I was like, was there anything left of Joseph Smith's coffin when this was over? Like, these can't all be legitimate. And there's a whole science, too, to finding an object, finding out what its provenance is, and then directly declaring it to be legitimate. Like, sometimes an object is legitimate, but it has the wrong provenance. For instance, there's a document in this book called the Characters Document.
Yes.
The Community of Christ owns. And the first time I went to visit Community of Christ, which was in the early 2010s, they brought this out and set it down and said, this is the document that Martin Harris took when he visited Samuel Brown and Charles Anthon in New York. And later on, we found out that that wasn't true, that that document is most likely not the document that Martin Harris took, but it is a legitimate transcription of characters from the plates. On the top of it, it says characters, misspelled without a C-H.
Right.
But the handwriting that wrote characters was John Whitmer. And so we think that that was a document produced a year after Martin Harris went to visit those scholars in New York, where John Whitmer, who was one of the eight witnesses of the Book of Mormon, copied the characters off the plates. He had seen the plates. So you've got this document that's legit and that's important in church history, but that has the incorrect provenance. And so it's still really important. We still put it in the book. It's not a fraud or anything like that. But the people that had it in their custody for over a century just had the wrong idea about where it came from. and what it was exactly. And there were a lot of things like that where we would have people come to us all the time and present this object or this object, especially as the project really started rolling. And we had to be really, really cautious with provenance to make sure this was a legitimate thing. And that's one of the biggest ins and outs is sometimes we had to, like, you know, sort of ruin someone's day by saying, it doesn't look like this is real. And here's the reason why. And it matters to you, but it probably isn't that important when it comes to church history.
See, that's so interesting about the characters document, because there was a, because Mark Hoffman created a different document that was supposedly more historically accurate than the one that we know about. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, Charles Anthon does leave behind a description of the document that Martin Harris shows to him. And he talks about some of the characters that are similar to what's on the characters document that's in our book. But he also talks about some kind of circular Aztec calendar or something that's on it. And so in the 80s, Hoffman produced a forgery that matched that description. And purported it to be real, as the real Anthon transcript that Martin Harris supposedly brought out. Now, Hoffman, in a weird twist, actually his documents now are valuable too. There's a Hoffman document in the book that Community of Christ has in its possession.
Is that the Joseph Smith III
blessing? This is the Joseph Smith III blessing. Yeah, Hoffman, and this was a big deal. You probably remember this when this happened, but Hoffman produced a document that was supposedly a transcript of a blessing Joseph Smith gave to his son, Joseph Smith III, where he ordained him to be his successor to the high priesthood. And obviously, this is going to be a big deal to us and Community of Christ. Community of Christ produced a whole pamphlet when it came out, basically saying, this is it, this proves it.
We're the true church.
We're the true church. Gordon B. Hinckley gave an entire address in General Conference where he talked about the Joseph Smith III blessing. And basically said, we have it. If it's legitimate, okay. Even if it is legitimate, he noted that the language in the blessing was conditional, that it was when you come of age and if you keep the commandments. And so President Hinckley's argument was, even if it's legitimate, it doesn't necessarily mean that Joseph Smith III was foreordained. We believe in free agency.
So he was still iffy on it.
He was still iffy on it, yeah. Okay. But I mean, if you go back and look through the Ensign in the early 1980s, I mean, there's a lot of mentions of Hoffman forgeries that are in there, and those forgeries in and of themselves have become part of the tableau of the Restoration, part of the history of it. In fact, that Anthon transcript, just in a weird twist, one of the Restoration factions in Independence had a guy contact them from South America who said that he had the plates and that the angel had given him the plates, and that he was going to translate the sealed portion. And he was trying to raise funds from these people in Independence.
This is recently.
This is within the last 2 or 3 years. And, well, everybody in Independence is like, well, take a picture of the plates and send it to us. And he was like, well, I can't take a picture of the plates, but I can send you a transcript of what's on the plates.
Oh, brother.
So he sent the transcript, and somebody took a look at it and realized, well, this is Hoffman's forgery.
Really?
The guy in South America wasn't aware that Hoffman had made this forgery, and he must have found it on the internet somewhere or something like that, and he sent it as legitimate proof that he had the plates. Well, a well-informed person in Independence produced a document basically comparing what Hoffman had produced with what this guy from South America had sent, and that sort of really impinged the movement.
I had not heard this.
Like, it's this whole interrelated web, you know, of forgery on top of forgery, spaced 30 years apart. And again, that's one of the other reasons why I was drawn to objects a little bit, is we wanted this book to be like a sort of cabinet of curiosities. You know, here's some angles of the Restoration that we don't always talk about. Because when we talk about the Restoration, we focus on the miracles. We focus on things like the translation of the Book of Mormon and the First Vision. But we don't always get into like the nitty-gritty of everyday life. And the weird sort of unexpected ways that the Restoration has sort of involved itself in different areas of life. And objects sometimes allow you to look at things from an unconventional angle.
That's so interesting. So wait a minute, because I'm gonna dive into this a little bit more. So, because I've heard about these sealed portion of the Book of Mormon for years.
Yeah, every couple of years, somebody comes out and says.
Yeah, because they're supposedly a descendant of Joseph Smith that was translating it or something. I never understood how it got to South America, but.
Well, the guy that claimed that he had the plates was from South America. And he contacted a few people that were in groups that had broken off from Community of Christ. And
was it Community of Christ or Church of Christ Temple Lot?
From the Independence area, I guess you'd say.
Because I had heard that there was a group from Church of Christ Temple Lot, Hedrickites, that had broken off, and then they were trying to take over the temple lot so that they could build a new temple based on the sealed plates.
there's a whole, I don't know if that's linked to it. I haven't heard that particular link. The people that I know that were linked to it, and I won't name their names here, were members of the Joint Conference of Restoration branches. And two of my friends, like I said, ran a branch, and they had several members of their branch kind of take off to support this guy in South America. And the guy apparently brought two people from Independence down to South America to show them the plates and the Sword of Laban. And they came back saying, you know, it's legit, it's real.
So he has some sort of
plates. He has some sort of object. And that's the weird thing, too, is in their culture as well, they know that our church exists. We're kind of like the 800-pound gorilla that you can't ignore.
Right.
But this guy from South America was spinning conspiracy theories about how men in white shirts and ties had broken into his house to try and find the plates.
Oh, right.
And what he was basically implying was that people from our church in Brazil were trying to stop him from doing what he was doing. And so there was kind of this...
Well, that fills right in with Joseph Smith's story.
Yeah, this rumor that there were, you know, Latter-day Saint men in black trying to stop the thing from happening. And I had to say, hey, if you knew anything about our missionaries and our missionary system, to say that we're that well organized to track down a guy and break into his apartment is really saying something. Like, most of our missionaries are 18-year-old kids that are knocking on doors and trying to figure out, like, their own lives. And to say that they're launching a systematic attack on this guy to stop him from bringing forth the sealed portion is really stretching it. And yet, I also know people in Utah that are interested in this guy from South America and feel like he's legit and bringing it forth. They were very active on Facebook until a couple months ago, and then they sort of dropped off the radar, and I don't know what's happened to him since then. So like I said, it's sort of fun, but yeah. It's also distressing because, you know, two of my good friends who were in Independence, who are ministers for the JCRB, lost a significant portion of their congregation because they believed in this individual, and it caused further schism in an organization that's already had splits and is split for a number of reasons. And so, you know, it's kind of whittling away these groups that aren't part of our church that still believe in the Book of Mormon. And we're trying to do everything we can to support them. I think earlier when you mentioned a meeting in Independence, we do a meeting every May in Independence where we invite every church that believes in the Book of Mormon to come together. We usually have one night at one of their churches and one night at the Stake Center in Independence. And we invite, you know, three or four professors from BYU to speak. And then we invite, they find three or four scholars from their own movements to get up. And the whole point of the meeting is to increase faith of the Book of Mormon and to try and use that as the point where we can come together and believe, at least in the restoration. So, boy, it's a crazy family out there. And I'm honored and pleased to be a part of it. But there are ups and downs, like this guy from South America, who I've only heard secondhand information from. And I don't want to delegitimize anybody's faith, but there's serious indications that this is, you know, not legitimate.
It's so interesting that you say that. So he found a Hoffman forgery and thought it was legit or something?
Well, that's the document that I saw. The document that I saw was prepared by someone in Independence that was saying, hey, this is how we know this guy's fake. And one of the things that they pointed out was that the document the guy had sent, it looked exactly like a Hoffman forgery. And so things get recycled through different cultures. I don't know the background of this guy from South America, but according to one source, he was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints at one point.
Our church.
Our church.
Not the Strangites.
Not the Strangites. He's kind of cycled his way through the whole thing. Strangites are a whole other deal. I've had dealings with them too, and I love them as well.
Oh, I know. I've had Bill Shepherd on.
Yeah, Bill's awesome. I love Bill. One of the objects I really wanted to put in the book was James Strang's scepter. That's in possession of Community of Christ. Locke Mackay
really?
Says it's his favorite object in their collection. But James Strang, you've talked to Bill, had himself crowned king of the kingdom of God,
right,
and had a scepter made. And there is this wooden scepter that's now in possession of Community of Christ that apparently is the scepter that Strang held on that day.
Wow.
And so to me, that was really, really cool. And I thought we'd insert it in the book as a way of sort of talking about these different restoration groups.
Yeah.
Hey, not everybody followed Brigham Young, and here's an object linked back to that. Now, this is more inside baseball than maybe you want to know, but originally the book was 100 objects. It was going to be called The History of the Church in 100 Objects, because that's a common genre that's out there. But our publisher was like, let's start with 50.
So you had to take it out and
see. And unfortunately, we said, here's the 100. This is like asking us to choose our children. So
I'm going to tell everybody, you got to go buy this book so that we can get the extra 50.
Cedar Fort did say, if this does well, we'll do a volume 2. And then you can put your James Strang scepter in there. Because I was like, no, you can't leave out the James Strang scepter. He's such an interesting person.
Yes.
But like you said, there's also commercial issues. So they sort of chose objects that had specific relevance to Latter-day Saints, which I understand completely. There's a commercial side of things that I'm not that familiar with. You know, I'm just interested in the restoration and in crazy, crazy things. But anyway.
Well, that's cool. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Casey Griffiths. In our next conversation, we'll talk about one of the most unusual relics in Casey's book.
We ran over to their house. We grabbed the temple swimsuit. We stole a mannequin from BYU. We set up a photography studio in my in-law's basement. And while everybody else was upstairs eating turkey and having Thanksgiving dinner, me and my brother-in-law were downstairs taking pictures of the swimsuit.
Nice.
To where my wife's family was like, What are you doing? Like, why is there a female mannequin in a swimsuit in our basement during Thanksgiving? And exactly what's going on? And we had to say, we got the temple swimsuit. And that, again, you know, is a good conversation starter.
Exactly. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents. And for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button, or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at gospeltangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.